This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Tech, show number 153, recorded on January 30th, 2014. Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home, news, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. We post the show, world-class show notes, each week out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, love to hear from you. Send me an email, jim@theAverageGuy.tv. And since I changed that over, getting many more emails, so it must be easier for you to remember that. Jim@theAverageGuy.tv. You can find me on Twitter, just at Jay Collison, or now we have a call-in number for your questions. Kyle was kind enough to call in a couple weeks ago. I haven't heard anybody since, but dial 402-478-8450, 402-478-8450, and just leave a message. We'll play it on the show, so it's a great way to get a question in if you want to do that for me. Man, I am really struggling with some issues tonight. Well, that's just kind of weird. We're also using Chatwing for chat, and you can log in with Facebook, Twitter, Google, or Chatwing, or just a guest. We have a Live 2 option, so if you go to theAverageGuy.tv/Live2, that fits a Surface or a iPad better. And we also have a chat-only page if you go to theAverageGuy.tv/chat now. That'll be great. Should be good on just about any device, although on some mobile devices you can't watch the show and chat at the same time. All that navigation is found in the upper right-hand corner over at theAverageGuy.tv. All right, well, I got a couple guests tonight. Let's bring in Christian first, though. Christian's back. It's been a couple of weeks, I think, since we've seen him. He's been real busy with homework. He's got a new camera. Christian, how are you?
Oh, great, now that I have a new camera, especially considering that it was its usual retail of $90-some dollars on Newegg, yep. And was on blast out for $59 at Amazon, applied a 25 gift card, free shipping, and it came 3 days early for $35 out of pocket, and I was like, yeah, this is a good deal. So,
not a bad deal.
Yeah.
So you're on a Logitech C920, so I'm going to move to... I'm actually super impressed with just the quality, though, so I may pick up a few for work now, too, as well. A guy I haven't talked to in about a year. I think the last CES is the last time I talked with Chris Barnes, but Chris, welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's been a while, so I'm glad to be here with you.
Yeah, always good. It's never soon enough, so we'll have to not make it a year again before we have you back, but I always enjoy having you on the show. Chris, tell everybody where we find all the stuff that you do as well.
Yeah, so I'm a podcaster with the End User Podcast over there at thedigitalmediazone.com. You can also find some random ramblings of mine on barnesian.com, which is my personal website there.
I'll have to check that out. All right, Chris, welcome. And then all the way over to the left, and we talked with Tony Rayner on the Home Server Show, I think a week ago or so, and I've been trying to get him on for a Hackintosh show as well that we'll do maybe after everything settles down for you. Tony, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Jim.
Good to have you. All right, let's dig right in. I want to talk a little bit about the state of home media these days. You know, it always seems like it's changing. We don't spend a lot of time here. I mean, we do off and on, but we haven't made a concerted effort to really kind of sit down and talk about home media. Everybody does it a little bit different, and so between the four of us, we all have four very unique setups. Just as I look at the notes for both you, Tony, and you, Chris, it's very unique in itself. Tony, let's start with you. Why don't you just kind of quickly run through kind of your setup, how you consume it? I know you got a home server in the middle of it, but just talk about how you have the thing set up, and then you're going to mention Plex, and I'm going to ask a bunch of questions because I can never get that thing to work.
Yeah. Right, so. Actually, mine, I'm running a 2011 box with DVDs. I do a lot of folder rips with My Movies, and just what a great app. And I tried a Windows Media Center PC in my living room, and the kids just could not keep their hands off of it. So I eventually went with a jailbroken Apple TV 2, and it was great because it was low power, instant on, and it could play the folder rips natively. And recently, you kind of mentioned Plex in there as well. Is that, you know, the problem I had, though, is, you know, it's late at night, me and my wife sitting in the living room, and she's hogging the TV, and so I can't watch my, you know, movies. So I was like, here I am with this iPad, you know, but it can't play the network media. So that's kind of where Plex came in, to where it could stream to the iPad.
So you've got the rips on the 2011 box. You've got you got the Plex server installed somewhere. Where do you have that? Where do you have that installed?
Yeah, it's running on my 2011 box.
Right on the 2011 box.
And recently, you know, because I upgraded that poor little i3-540 to a Core i7 because Plex could not see the folder rip, so I had to convert. And you try to convert a few 100 movies with an i3-540, yeah, it takes a long time.
Hey, don't diss the Core i3-540. That's man. What I'm running right now.
Oh man, it, you know, other than for the rips, it is just rock solid, that thing. So no, I actually hated to change over. And what I did is, after searching around with the MyMovies forums and so forth, I think it was through MyMovies can do, you know, like a folder monitoring auto conversion. I think it was a MP4 high profile is what they call it. And that format, and luckily the folder size, or excuse me, the movie size is like 1/4 the folder rip. It plays well on the TV, on the web, on the iPad. It just runs, you know, looks good all the way around. Phone, you name it. That format looks good.
So, okay, so you've gone, you lost me a little bit in there. You've gone away from folder rips and you're using a different format now?
No, I have both.
Okay. But yeah. So you've ripped all your folder rips into another format, and what's that format?
Yeah, the folder rips, just what they are. I guess it's a VOD,
right?
You know, DVD folder rips, and the other one is an MP4. But MyMovies has a in the 2011 app has a number of pre-configured formats, I guess, and this one's MP4 high profile, and that works well across all my devices, the web, so forth.
So MyMovies is making that rip for you. Okay.
Yeah, because you try to find a batch converter, it's actually quite hard. But MyMovies just, hey, look at this folder, convert to this format, into that folder over there, and you're done. So yet another use for MyMovies.
Yeah, every time I've tried to reuse Plex or set up a Plex server, Plex works on the Drobo. I've tried it on the home server. I've tried it, you know, in a couple different times, and it won't see my folder rips. I go to play them and they're not there. I get an error. You know, so I've got the client installed on my PC here. I've got the server installed. Is there anything I'm supposed to be doing with my folder rips to get Plex to recognize them?
You're right. Plex cannot play the folder rips. Now, let me correct that. I believe Mike Fauché said it cannot play DVD folder rips, but it can play Blu-ray folder rips.
Oh, okay. So I was mistaken, and I thought that's why we went with Plex, is because it would play folder rips, but you're saying it doesn't.
Yeah, that's one of my issues. I tried Plex a while back, but it could not see the folder rips. Xbox Media Center, which I guess is the basis for Plex, can, but I like the interface and the constellation of products that Plex has much better. And so I tried to, you know, once I kind of figured that out, went through the MyMovies conversion, you know, tried a few movies to see how it went. I was like, yeah, the size is so small. I just ripped all of them, keep them in folder rips, and convert all of them to this MP4 high profile. And it works like a charm.
Okay. Now, I'm not a big guy to rip. I mean, I do rip movies from time to time. If I know I'm going to watch them a couple times, you know, I'll go out and rip them down. So I can watch them on the PC and such. So it sounds to me, and I've got that somewhere around here, I've got that certificate that we got for MyMovies at the meetup, right? I think it was kind of a deal. It sounds like to me then what I should do is load MyMovies on the 2011 box, and that will then convert those. It'll do a batch conversion and put them in a different format. Mm-hmm. And you're saying at that point Plex could pick it up and the Apple TV could as well. But the Apple TV plays the ripped folders, right?
Well, see, you know, I had the jailbroken Apple TV. It could play it already, but since they got converted to this MP4 profile, the Plex app on my Apple TV can see it now.
Okay. And so you're consuming them. You've got a TV with a jailbroken.
Two TVs with the jailbroken Apple TV. You know, the Android phone with the Plex app, the Plex web app, and I guess pretty much everywhere. Yeah, the Plex connects.
And how does it work on the web? Plex has got a web interface, right?
They have a new portal now. It's really, really nice in that you go to the Plex.tv and you have your account created, and they'll show you a list of your servers. In my case, I just have the 2011 box, and you pull it up. And what I have, looking at it now, you can do a few channels like, say apps, and then you can, whatever you elect to include in that server, from music to home movies to rip movies to photos, whatever, you can select that and then play them, you know, right in the web page or the web site.
Anthony, do they have a non-cloud offering? Like, can you hit the server directly and use the web app in that way? Or have you tried it at least?
No, I have not. Only through the actual Plex.tv site. Site. Once you go to Plex.tv, you log into your account, and then it brings up an interface for your account, your servers, your media. Now, you can do it, I believe, free, but if you do and I'm doing it for the first few months, like $3-4 a month to make sure I like it, or you can do a $75 lifetime. And what's good about that, watch the first, 30 minutes in the movie, on my iPad, and I, have a few free minutes here, and it goes, hey, it'll start you right out where you started or ended last time. And that's a really nice feature. It also enables you to, if you want, say, I want to watch, right now I have this movie called, The Godfather. And what it can do, if your upload speed from home is kind of slow, you can connect it, in my case, like with your Google Drive, and it can load that movie up so you can play it much more flawlessly, from your storage space instead of streaming from your home connection with a 2 megabit upload speed. So the premium does have some nice extra features.
How much is that?
Like I said, I think it's $3 or $4 monthly or like $75 lifetime.
Well, so it's
not really that bad. I think some of the other apps, I remember correctly, I think if you are a premium member, like paying monthly or the one time, you get the Android app free. Now, I know there are iPad apps. So I'm trying to remember if they're a la carte or if they're also included in the premium membership. But they all work very, very, very well.
So what are you doing about network television then?
I don't watch it.
Okay, so you're boycotting network television.
No, I really don't.
I'm just kidding.
My wife, She refuses to give up her DVR, so I'm a slave to Charter for that reason.
Okay, so you're recording it through Charter's DVR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. She does watches it there. Yeah.
I don't watch regular TV.
So you've got cable.
Uh-huh.
And then she's the only one watching it. You're not ripping it off and streaming it into your.
No. I don't really care about network TV.
All right, fair enough.
You got too many podcasts to watch.
That's true. If you've got a few podcasts to listen to, those take some time.
Yeah, she goes, "Don't you get tired of podcasts?" I said, "Don't you get tired of reality TV?"
Which makes you wonder, are they one and the same? I don't know. Who knows?
Chris, are you going to launch a new reality podcast?
No, I've got enough podcasts to do right now. I'm good. I am good on the podcast, the podcast front. Chris, talk a little bit about you got 2011, same as Tony, kind of behind the scenes. Tony, let me ask you, how much total storage do you have on that 2011 box? Because Chris has got it listed, you didn't.
I think I have around 10 terabytes, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, about the same as me. I've got 9 in my 2011 box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Chris, talk a little bit about your setup and how you've got it configured.
So I've got a little mini ITX home theater PC sitting underneath the TV, and that's a Core i3 box that I built myself, and it's got a little case around it and all that. And basically, I try to keep all of the media off on the server, so I've got all the folder rips off on the server, and I add the network share to Windows Media Center so that I've got all the DVD rips. And I don't bother transcoding them into any format. And I don't really watch the movies on a mobile device or anything like that anyway, so that's not a big deal for me. What is a big deal for me is I have a 5.1 like home theater in a box system. It's not the best. It's not a full receiver setup, but it gets it done. And when you go into the digital world, the surround sound picture is kind of fuzzy sometimes. You know, downloading movies from, I don't know, Zune or iTunes or wherever you're getting your movies, the surround sound is kind of hit or miss. And even playing some of the converted videos, you have to be really careful the format that you convert it into, that it actually has the surround sound in it. So I kind of struggle with that a little bit sometimes. So anyway, moral of the story is that Video TS pretty much always has surround sound, so I just keep them like that on the server.
So in your case, right, just leaving them in their native format is really best for you. And you're ripping them in native Blu-ray as well?
So I don't have any Blu-ray rips yet. I'd like to do that. And they're like 30 gig a pop. That is some serious...
a little bit of space.
Yeah. Some serious data, but you know, ultimately, storage is cheap these days, so that's probably not that big a deal. I just haven't done it yet, because it takes roughly 2 years to rip a single Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's a little while, isn't it, to get them in? And you really got to ask that question, you know, why? When we get to Christian, we talk about his setup. I think it makes more sense. But if you're watching it in the house, Chris, in your case, you probably watch it at the TV, right? You say you're not really consuming it on your phone. You're not taking it on the road with you. You're not trying to consume it in an airplane. Those kinds of deals, right? Pretty much home viewing and home viewing only.
Yeah, and if I did take some stuff on the road, I would just convert it real quick before I left or something like that. But the main long-term storage option for me is just in the native one, because you can do whatever you want with the native folder, right? You can go to any format with any container that you want to go to after that. So it's kind of nice.
Kind of becomes the master copy, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you can grab those. You, Chris, what are you using for your 2011 box hardware-wise? Maybe you said that, but say it again for me.
Right, so that one's actually kind of a funny story. So I've got, right next to me, I've got the server sitting there on the floor and my desktop sitting on the floor, and the desktop is actually a Core i7 that I happened to find in the recycling room of my apartment building. So
somebody just thrown it away?
Some business in the building, I guess, had just thrown away a computer, and it looked relatively new, so I cracked it open. You know, I'm not expecting to find much. The RAM was gone, the hard drive was gone, you know, because I'm sure they didn't want their data to leak out. And I thought, you know, hey, I'll give that motherboard a shot. And it turns out the motherboard was bad in some way and didn't work very well. But the actual processor, the heart of it, was absolutely fine. So what I did was I took that and I built another PC around it, and that Core i7 became the desktop that I'm using to talk to you guys with. And the old desktop, which is I think Q6600 quad core.
Okay.
It's right before, maybe two generations before they went to the Core i series.
Yep.
That is the server now. Mm-hmm. And I maxed out the drives in it, and that adds up to 9 terabytes on all the SATA ports.
And that chip runs pretty hot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Those were some really warm processors.
Yeah, there is a heat sink that is big as your head on it. Yeah. A big old aluminum heat sink on it. And
yeah, that was the kind of the golden era of, it doesn't matter how hot it is as long as it runs fast.
And you know? Yeah. I just moved apartments, so this story may be changing a little bit, but in my old apartment I didn't have to pay the power bill.
Oh.
So I'm not sure. Yeah. I haven't put a watt meter on it in a while.
You know, and I've talked about this before, but I've got this Dell 690 workstation. It's a dual core Xeon, you know, they're 3 gigs each. They're about 6 years old. They're not power consumption friendly at all. And I run about 375 watts on that thing, just idling.
Ooh, and, just idling?
Yeah. Now, to be fair, it's got 6 drives in it. So it's got quite a few drives and these processors, but yeah, 375 idle. You know, it's got a big fan in there and to kind of keep it cool. So I really struggle to turn that thing on. You know, you're like, ooh, that's basically a hair dryer running 24/7, you know. And I think, guys, that's something we have to think about when we think about our home theater systems, because you know, Chris, I'm assuming you've got that 660 running 24/7, right, for your home server?
Yeah. Yes, it is. So the desktop will go to sleep, but the server stays as it is.
Right. Any thoughts now? So you're thinking about that. Any thoughts to trying to get that power consumption down a little bit? Maybe move that onto a little more efficient box.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, I guess I could move to some kind of wake on LAN situation, and you know, whenever I went to try to use it, I could wake it up or something like that. One of the problems is I also use it as a VPN server quite often from work. So I wrote an article about how to set up a VPN server on the Digital Media Zone. It turned out being surprisingly popular. I thought nobody would want to look at that. But it turns out to be a pretty nice option to, you know, you're at like Starbucks or whatever, and you want to have a VPN to protect yourself from the people snooping around you and that kind of thing. And it works pretty well. And I can VPN in, and I can hit the hit my server resources, I can wake up my desktop, log in there, that kind of thing, and, you know, use the Core i7 remotely from my laptop, and that is a nice thing to have. So, long story short, I guess, you know, I'm not sure if I can keep using it the way I'm using it and decrease the power consumption. I bet I would have to just move to a less power-hungry chip or something like that.
What are you using for the VPN client there, or the server software?
So it's Windows Home Server.
Oh. So you didn't. Okay. So you created, but are you using? Does it have a VPN built into it?
Yes.
So, okay. So you're using the built-in version.
Right. I'm using the built-in Windows Server VPN.
Wow. Good for you. Congratulations. No wonder that was popular. Nobody else can figure out how to make that thing work. Yeah. Well, it's a good solution, right, to be able to kind of come in and...
Native.
Yeah, run that through. We you know, sometimes we've got a really solid VPN at work, so if I'm in that situation where I'm at a, you know, Starbucks or whatever, and I feel like I need it, we've got a browser-based SSL VPN solution that I can run through that pretty much just locks the... It's like you're being there, you know? It's like you're at work. Mm-hmm. So, pretty cool. What's your up and down speed there at home, then?
It's... like 50 down, maybe 15 up, okay. Something like that.
So pretty decent. Tony, what are you running?
Like 16 and 3.
Well, that's still doable. Yeah. Christian, what do you get there at the University of Maryland?
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. You know I had to ask.
So it depends where you're sitting. Actually, the current room I'm in for this semester is still on the 8 down, 8 up, which isn't fabulous. But the new place we'll be in next semester is tapped right into the mainframe, so you're looking at hundreds of megabytes down and up at any given time. I also have learned that the University of Maryland is one of 48 worldwide internet backbones. So there's like the University of Maryland network, but then the university also hosts one of the 48 backbone architectures that basically runs and routes internet traffic all over. So I mean, we have really great resources to, you know, we're right in the underpinnings of the internet itself. So I mean, the speeds, I mean, I can walk over to the library on Wi-Fi and get 300 down if no one's hitting it at night. So I mean, it's they have good bandwidth when you're in the right place.
Yeah.
So it may not be the best for you know, like downloading a large file, but 8 symmetric for streaming stuff is more than enough.
Yeah, and that's why my video looks fine. And at home, we get about, we pay for 35-35, but we consistently get 45-40, so.
Yeah, when you're home, it's, you guys never struggle with any of that.
Right.
That, and that's, but that's pretty unusual. I think most people, you know, the average guy is, Tony, actually more like you. Chris, you've got bandwidth like me. You probably pay for the premium to get the really good up and down speeds. Tony, I think most people are like you. It's 15 and 3 or 15 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty. And that's, Chris, you know, we would struggle with 2 if for the stuff that we do, right?
On the upload end, yeah, sure.
You know, we're going to talk a little bit about podcasting here towards the end of the show, but two or three is just not enough. I think I'm 15 or 20 up, and that's although when the kids consume it, it gets that goes pretty fast.
Yeah.
When they start, you know, uploading their stuff.
Yeah, you've got some 4K Netflix to look forward to. That'll saturate your bandwidth.
Yeah, that will. That will for sure. Although, you know, that's some interestingly, Chris, since you brought that up and you mentioned it, I haven't really followed that very much, nor, I mean, I kind of consume for me, well, hold on, before we do that, let's go to Christian real quick before we get too far. Christian, you're still using the subsonic box, right, that you got at home? Is that how you're consuming most of your media, or are you just too busy to watch anything at this point?
Yeah, I do tunes right now, but I haven't reset up the TV subsonic since we did all that re-architecting in January, so...
Yeah, and we basically, Christian got tired of having a host provider, so he just made his own. And a lot of it's being hosted out at his place with that. Have you had any trouble? You haven't had any trouble with, is it Comcast?
Verizon.
No, it's Verizon.
It's Fios.
Yeah, they haven't sent you a cease and desist letter yet or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Good. That's good. I'm always worried about when you're hosting a web farm on something like that, but we're getting really good service out of that thing. If you're at theaverageguy.tv/live, that's being hosted off Christian servers there out of Buffalo, and we're getting amazing bandwidth and amazing speed out of it, Christian. I've been watching the stats over the month, and my bounce rate was in the 60s, maybe 70s, and it's in the 6s now, 6, 7, 8% bounce rate off the site. So that's, people are staying. Whatever they're doing, they're getting there fast, and they're staying, which is, I think, is what you want them to do on your website, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just music for, Tony, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was a lot like Chris in that, you're talking about his hardware. My Hackintosh is a Q9550. My main desktop's a Core i7-875K I got from PC Doc, and I just changed the water cooler died, and I put a Cooler Master 212 Evo. It's got a radiator big as a car radiator, but it runs at about 50C. Now my the i7, he got one out of the trash. I just paid $125 for a used i7 860, I think, and the stock cooler that thing is running like 80C. So I just bought the H80 that PC Doc had advertised on the forums. Mm-hmm. So I just bought that and want to install that this weekend, see if it can get it cooler than 80C. And then hopefully when my first pass movie conversion runs, and then I'll probably use like Lights Out to see if I get that server cut off some when I'm not at home.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's a lot of power, I'm sure.
Yeah. It is, yeah. It's one of those things. I struggle with it. I need to really upgrade the broadcast server here, or the studio PC that I'm talking on. It's a Core i3-540. I was having some trouble with it. I was getting some clicking in my ears when I would go full HD on Google Hangouts. I would get that audio clicking, Chris. I don't know if you've ever heard that.
No, I haven't seen that.
Well, the problem is that I think the audio is getting bound by the CPU. And it just kind of creates these little popping in the background, you know, kind of thing. Somehow I changed some things around and it's gone at this point. So it may not have been CPU bound. It may have been some other interference that I was having. But I thought a lot about, you know, Core i5, Core i7. And I've just always, when I think of an i7, I always just think of heat and power. And I just kind of go, man, do I really need that much power? Now, we're talking about home media. You guys are ripping in some form, or Tony, you're transcoding. Chris, mm-hmm. You're not. You're not. But in that sense, the i7 would be great for some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Chris, anything that... Oh, go ahead, Tony.
No, I was going to say that I found out quickly the reason I switched off that i3-540 is that the My Movies video converter service uses Handbrake, and it will absolutely saturate a CPU. Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to get a benchmark of a CPU, in fact.
Yeah. It was running the CPU like 100%. So I put the i7 in, and it went from like 70%, and I think it's now in the 50 CPU percent usage. So it does give you a little breathing room.
So, Jim, since you were asking about it, I just pulled up my Amazon order history, and the cooler that I bought for the server is a Cooler Master Hyper 212 Plus. And that is with your option one or two 120 mil fans that stand upright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the same one I got. It is huge.
How big is that case? You got a pretty big case.
Yeah, so the it barely fits in that case. I've got maybe like 10 millimeters to spare or something like that.
Yeah. Christian, what are you running? You've got a pretty powerful box that's sitting right by you. What's that got?
The fans or the hardware?
No, the CPU.
The CPU's a FX8350 8-core unlocked. I think it's AM3 Plus.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've got AMD.
Yeah, it's a 4 gigahertz CPU.
And I've been looking at AMD too, to be honest with you, some of the 8 cores.
Well, AMD suck for laptops because of the heat, but when you get a desktop, if you want, you know, multi-core processing for a cheaper price tag, it's not a bad deal, as long as you're willing to put up with, you know, I have it in a full ATX, and the cooling's fine, and the temps are good, so, and the noise is fine when it's idling. It works fine for me. Like I was telling you earlier, I actually run the Windows, I've had this Windows 7 instance since, you know, like when Windows 7 first came out, and believe it or not, it might actually be an upgrade of Windows Vista, because I don't think I ever redid my system from Vista. So, you know, it's been running on various hardware that has all been AMD down the line for, you know, 6+ years, starting with the dual core AMD 5000 plus, which was an AM2 socket. And that was kind of the kicking it old school hot stuff back in 06, 07. Then eventually I upgraded it to the Corsair 4 motherboard with a 6-core 1090T. That CPU was all right. That was another Black Edition unlocked. It was a 6-core. But then the 8350 8-core at 4 gigahertz really just kind of made it smoke. Combine that with 16 gigs of DDR3 and a hybrid OCZ Revo drive, and I mean, this thing eats through anything. I mean, I'm powering 224-inch Dell IPS monitors here in the new setup that we did over break. And, you know, like I said, I have tons of apps open at any given time, and it never gives me a hard time. Boots up quick. So having that 8 cores on the CPU and having the SSD are easily the two biggest factors. So if you really want a performance workstation without paying a big price tag, it's a good way to go. Your electric bill might be marginally higher, but you know, it's $3 or more a month on your electric bill versus either way, you can get a
this time of the year. That's not so bad. That's not so bad.
No.
Here in Nebraska, where it regularly gets, you know, 10 below. Running it, that's sometimes I think, well, it'll heat the basement. You know, that'll be all right. It'll be all right. Hey, let me ask the three of you this. Certainly I hate to say and sound dramatic and say, we're at the crossroads for home media. You know, everybody's trying to figure out what's going to go kind of in the living room, where it's going to end up. Tony, I'll start with you. If money was no object at this point and you felt like, you know, you're holding back on changing the way you do it because of money, what would you do differently if I just threw a bunch of money at you and said, go buy something different? Would you do anything different on your home media or keep it the same?
Probably pretty similar, but the one thing that really does interest me, and right now my wife would never approve that, is I'd love to have a Sonos.
Oh, all right.
Sonos system.
Yeah, they're a little expensive.
Yeah, because even she's like, you know, go to her cousin's house and she can plug in everything, and she's like, wow, this is really cool. So, well, buy me a Sonos.
All right, so Sonos would be worth looking at. I think that's probably not a bad deal, and you're in a 3-4-5 bill investment, I think, for that by the time you get all the equipment and all the things that support it.
Yeah,
no problem. Chris, what would you do different, or if I just threw a whole bunch of money at you?
So, I've got a bunch of requirements, and there is nothing on the market currently that meets all of my requirements except for Windows Media Center. So, I want to be able to play Blu-ray without switching HDMI, because that's a pain. And there's a Blu-ray player in the home theater PC. I want to be able to record the free over-the-air TV, which is free and awesome, at least if you're in the city, which I am, so I get good reception around here, the like Channel 4 is like 2 miles from here, so that works out pretty well.
Yeah, good, really good reception then.
Yeah, and then, you know, you want it to play network media and stuff like that, and you want it to do surround sound. And currently, there's pretty much no device on the market that does all of that stuff, including the live TV and the DVR. There's really nothing else out there that does that. So for the moment, until perhaps somebody else figures it out, that's what I'm going to be using. Even if you throw a bunch of money at me.
So if I did throw money at you, you said you had to buy something, you just buy a better home theater PC that was running. And I assume you're running Windows 7 with Media Center?
Yeah, that's Windows 7. And so if you did throw money at me, which I heartily encourage, I would probably buy a receiver and some real surround sound speakers instead of that home theater in the box.
There you go. So you'd upgrade your speakers.
Yeah, so that would be so like $600 or so.
Okay.
All right. So well, I'm ready. I'm ready anytime.
Yeah, can you give me your email address and I'll send it to you from PayPal? No.
Sure.
Christian, what about you? If I threw a bunch of money at you, you know, you're in a unique situation. You're in a dorm room. You know, you're kind of in temporary housing for a while. But anything you got kind of got your eyes on?
A server. Well, I would like to buy a 64 gig or 128 gigabyte RAM box with some cores that you could spin a bunch of VMs on and have fun with. Of course, we'll have that in our lab next year, but one that I could put some pet projects on for myself would be kind of fun. And they're out there. I mean, you can. There's occasionally these workstations that go on for bid at eBay that are like HP Z800s that have those kind of specs for like the $1,300 price tag, and they're like $4,000 or $5,000 machines. You just got to catch them at the right time. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I think I've been eyeing some Bose equipment that I would probably want to move into for sound. I don't feel like I've got really good. I would upgrade my, at least here at the desk, I would upgrade both the speakers and headphones, for podcasting with some, well, I would use the Bose in-ear stuff, which is just, I mean, I love my earbuds, don't get me wrong, but the Bose in-ear stuff is amazing, and I just love that sound quality. So I think for me here, getting just changing my sound would be something I'd be very interested. I am eyeing the... You know, I travel a couple times a year. I travel, and I'd just love to have the noise canceling. You know, the $300. I think they've come down to $269 or something like that right now. But those noise canceling. You know, and then you just pipe. You can just pipe the music right in. They're Bluetooth. I'd love to have those. That'd be great to have that. I'd love to get on the airplane and just shut it all out. You know. So. Well, any other thoughts on home media? I know we could talk about this for a long time, but I did want to kind of hold that up. Any other thoughts from you guys?
Not at the moment.
All right. Very good. Well, hopefully, as you've been listening, we touched on a few things. I got my Plex problem solved, which I could have swore Plex would work on ripped folders. But
I have a question that maybe someone can answer. Is that Plex on your server? It asks that, is it universal plug and play is enabled? The UPnP on your router?
Right, yep.
Isn't that inherently not safe?
It can be. So the key is that you want to make sure that UPnP is disabled on the internet side of your router. Because if you've got that thing exposed to the internet at large, then it really is unsafe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you've got it exposed to your local network, then you know maybe somebody who logged into your local network could do something, but it's a lot better. But yeah, if it's exposed to the internet at large, you'll definitely want to not do that.
Yeah, because when I installed the Plex software on my main desktop, trying to get it go through the web, it did not work well. Put it on my server, boom, first time. The other thing about Plex is I think there's some kind of naming conventions that you have to follow for Plex to pull the data and so forth correctly. So the way I do my movies is somewhat convoluted, but my wife is not surprised by that. But what I do is first on my desktop, I rip the movie, the feature only, not all the garbage. And so once that's ripped to a DVD, then I rip it to the server using the 2011 app. And then that by default will also convert it to that MP4 high profile. So I have the folder rip, the high profile version, and that way I can consume it anywhere. So I just had a question about UPnP. Yeah, I have to look into that further.
Yeah, it hasn't gotten a good rap over the years. It's definitely struggled. So it's one of those things, like, you want to check and be careful before you just turn it on. Chris is absolutely right. You just don't want to have it on.
And usually I try to find out what it's doing. So Home Server also uses UPnP for when you hook it up to the domain, the homeserver.com domain. And you can look at what it's actually doing. Usually they're like forwarding ports. Mm-hmm. And as long as what they're doing is not dynamic, you can usually just do it yourself and turn UPnP off entirely. And if it's off entirely, you know you're good. And if you have to turn it on because they do some dynamic something or other, then at least make sure it's not on the internet side of the router.
Yeah, I know Plex had the port forwarded and they try to help you with, but I thought it's pretty much a set port. It doesn't change.
Yeah, if that's the case, you can probably just go in and plug those ports in and turn UPnP off and just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But if they're opening ports on the fly and stuff like that, then, you know, who knows?
Yeah, but like I say, my impression of Plex, like I say, I used it probably a year or so ago when I was looking for a media server for my server. Servio was the only thing that really worked well. So as far as being able to use the built-in player on my Panasonic TV, and Plex didn't work well. But now this kind of second time around, man, what a difference. It really works well.
I think the DLNA stuff has gotten a little bit better over the last couple of years.
Massively better.
These TVs, yeah, being able to do this stuff. Guys, I'll be honest, I don't like port forwarding at all. If I'm going to do something that requires me to open a port, I guess I'm not going to use it. You know, it's one of those kinds of things.
Is it really that bad?
I'm not comfortable with it. Because I don't know what I'm doing. I think it's because I don't know what I'm doing, right? I'm going in there and reassigning ports, and I don't do it enough, and I don't do it often enough that I just feel comfortable with it. I feel like, to Chris's point, I feel like, man, did I just open up some kind of vulnerability to the outside that some, you know, some guy's scanning that's now going to have access to?
Well, what you don't want to do is open, well, A, you don't want to open up a port that a service isn't listening on, because that's just not healthy, right? But generally, it's true. To some degree, it really helps to know what service is going to be on that port, so you know what the vulnerability of the application is. For example, if I open up port 22 on my network, knowing that I want to SSH into my network, well, I know for an almost certainty that within 24 hours of that happening, there's going to be some bot that comes by, scans, finds that the service is listening to SSH communication, and it's just going to start hitting it with username and password attempts. So so I know that for that particular service, the best thing to do is to generate RSA keys that you save in your key store and disable password authentication so that you essentially have a public-private key that no bot is ever going to be able to even attempt to replicate. So and that's for one particular service, right? But, you know, for your general web stuff where it's like I have to open up a port so that I can hit a web page from over the internet, you know, that's not really as bad because with HTTP, in most cases, the worst you're going to see happen is, you know, a bot hits it, finds it. You know, unless you're a big site that like is generating traffic and you're an actual like top-level domain traffic, you're not going to have to worry about DDoS. What you have to worry about when you're doing like the homey kind of stuff is, you know, a bot coming by, doing a scan, finding a service, and then trying to basically send a bunch of different things to the service to see if there's any particular known vulnerabilities. So like one really common thing will be like web servers, for example. There's some web servers that will actually tell you what specific version number and operating system they're running on. And, you know, that in some ways is a guidebook for the hacker to say, okay, he's running, you know, Apache version 2.2.22, and Apache lists all the known bugs for each new version that point release that they do. And this is true for any software. So then the hacker goes and says, okay, which ones were security vulnerabilities that, you know, weren't addressed until the next release that they haven't upgraded to yet? And those will be the ones that, you know, if it is actually someone behind the curtain typing on a keyboard, you know, then there's a some risk. If it's just a random bot, you probably not as much. But really, you know, if you're just running a web service like Subsonic, for example, you know, Subsonic deploys its own internal Jetty web server, and it's like, yeah, at most it could take down Subsonic. So what? If you realize that someone really compromised your Subsonic, then reinstall Subsonic and move it to a different port. But, you know, in terms of, oh, it's going to get in my network and steal files and do stuff, well, the only remote one that I can think of that's applicable to this community is, I'm sure a lot of people have Windows Home Server boxes or remote access VPN that they sit with the website. And so obviously, if someone found your remote access webpage, theoretically, if they really wanted to mess with you, they could start brute forcing that login, but and then get to RDC and do all sorts of stuff. But the reality of that is somewhat diminished. Keep in mind that all of the remote access traffic on Windows Home Server is encrypted over HTTPS, so you're not going to get sniffed out, or no one's going to get a packet here or there. So really, just make strong passwords. And as long as you have strong passwords on the services you're running, you know, unless you're doing some networky administrator stuff, if you're just doing the average, you know, this is a home app and I want to open up a port, it's not going to be as bad. As long as, you know, like the big things you want to avoid, like the common mistakes that, you know, noobs will make pretty often is like, oh, I'm going to assign a DMZ to this computer so that the entire internet is exposed to this machine. Well, great, you solved the fact that you don't know how to do port forwarding, but now you've just opened every possible range to that machine. And so if your Windows firewall gets compromised, which we all know Windows firewalls can get compromised pretty easily, well, then you're in a very sore place.
So yeah. Did any of you guys see the news around port 32764?
No.
So you might want to, just to reassure yourself, go check this port with like Shields Up or something and make sure that it says that it's either not being seen at all or it's stealth. But it is a backdoor that is built into some routers, we found out.
Linksys, yeah.
Yeah, it was Linksys. I think it wasn't in a couple others too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, the article I'm reading right now says it's Linksys. It was found at the SANS Institute's Internet Storm Center. Reported a surge in probes against that port number, which is used by an alleged backdoor in Linksys routers. That was reported over New Year's Day holiday. But I'm getting into my security enjoyments.
Make sure you save some of that for tomorrow, Christian.
You know what? I'm going to save this topic for tomorrow.
Okay,
so.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Let me bring up one point real quick. Is, you know, a lot of people, this debate about antivirus on your home server. Well, someone said, right, you know, if you're running like MyMovie and it's pulling down, you know, cover art, metadata, so forth, should you be running antivirus for that reason? Is there any danger, you think, from that?
So can you describe that a little bit more?
Says, you know, the MyMovie service, you know, you rip a DVD and it's pulling, you know, cover art and metadata, you know, from Amazon and different services to populate your movie collection.
Oh,
is that a security risk? Could that be, I guess dangerous files?
So you can, if it's grabbing information from another server, you're not opening your network to infiltrations because it's outgoing traffic from your network to receive those files. The only time something like that could ever really get to you is there's a very sophisticated attack that, like I said, requires multiple hackers and multiple coordination, would be to mess with the DNS of your environment in such a way that, you know, when you request a file from Amazon.com, it's in fact redirecting you to some bogus place where your DNS was hijacked. DNS hijacking is commonly it's a common game on the internet between hackers, but with secure services like Amazon or otherwise, you know, you're not going to see that. So that's almost like saying if you go to Google and download, you know, Google News, you're putting yourself at risk. Well, no, you're not. But if you go to a site that, you know, does have something malicious that then installs itself on your computer, well, that's a different thing. But if you're just accessing metadata from known sources, that's not really putting you at risk.
If you're going to newz.ru or something, you might be worried.
Yeah. Well, I guess My Movies is pulling automatically. Let me make a few comments about My Movies real quick for people who may not be using the service. I use their full, I mean, every product they make, I pretty much use it. So a few things, if you're running Windows Media Center, if you're not aware of it, if you're using the iPad app, you could literally use the iPad app as a remote control for your Windows Media Center. Some other things it can do is you can scroll through the catalog and you find the movie you want and you just hit play. And recently on the iPad app the other day, after I do all this Plex conversion, I see a new tab that says, do you want to play and convert? So it can do it, you know, with its iPad, or excuse me, its server app, do that kind of on the fly. So now if Plex, I've kind of gained above that, you know, the web service, which is still nice. So have you ever run, do you use their online, My Movies, their online service as far as, you know, syncs your movie collection up to the cloud so you can access it there as a backup, and also you can run reports to, I guess, show yourself or other people what you have in your My Movies collection?
Yeah, there's some powerful software.
Oh, it's so powerful. Yeah.
So let me circle, but let me just circle this back around. I want to jump into some average guy podcast stuff here, since I got Chris Barnes with me. But just to seal up the port forwarding thing, the fact that Christian, you said, and I can't even remember the number, but or some, you know, no, Chris had said, did you hear about the port, you know, 3791.65? And I'm like, God, why are there that many ports, right? You know, it's and I get when, you know, when they design the internet and they, you know, they started making all this stuff work, I get all that. But I just don't think, you know, my premise behind the Average Guy Network here is that when it comes to technology, the average guy's screwed, right? That's kind of the premise we come at here in that. And I think ports are just baffling to most people. They just really kind of go, I mean, I'm a tech guy and I struggle with some of it. Christian, I would expect you to get it. You live in that world. But I think the average tech person is like, oh, what are we doing with all this stuff? And just the fact that I got to go to a security site and scan my router to see what's open and what's closed and stuff like that. It's just like that. We got to be better than that. So it's just one of those things that I think it's still too complicated for most people. And it should be easier and it should be better and it should be more secure. It should be inherently secure. And we should be able to do things without having to open and close ports. So, all right, there's my rant. That's over.
UNPN. Right.
I'll say that again.
UNPN.
Yeah, one that worked, maybe, would be nice.
Or UPN.
UPNP.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry, my bad.
No, you were thinking about the TV station. Yeah. Yeah, no. Chris, I want to talk, and Christian and Tony, jump in here as you see fit, but one of the things I'm noticing as we're moving to really, I mean, this has been, for us, this is pretty normal, but the average guy is really starting to move towards video, audio and video, conferencing or calls, right, whatever. And it's funny when I call my family and they jump on the iPad and they're talking to me and I put my earbuds in and I get on the microphone, they always snicker. You know, they're always like, oh, he's in the studio. But I love the sound that I get, right? I love the sound. I get my own sound back that I hear as well as what I'm hearing from them. And there's been a lot of changes, I think, just in, Chris, just you and I have seen a lot of changes just in equipment in the last, I think you've been podcasting 3-4 years now, 4-5 years?
Yeah, almost 4 years.
Yeah, me too, about the same time. And, man, the industry has kind of changed in that. I want to pick your brain a little bit on cameras before we talk about audio equipment real quick. Today I went on an exercise. We're building a studio on the campus there at Gallup for some learning. And, I've just recently changed over to the Logitech C920. I've really liked the performance of it, but it's meant for a 2-foot interface, right? It's really not meant, although it could go out a little bit farther. I turned the camera today and started zooming across the room to see. It's got like a 4x optical zoom, and it wasn't bad, right? I mean, it actually does a pretty nice job. It's a fairly robust camera. But if I wanted to do something else inside a Hangout or something else inside Skype, I would need to get a better camera than this that's probably got optical zoom as opposed to, you know, just the digital zoom that's inside these cameras. You know, the difference between a phone and a really good DSLR, right? DSLR. Anyway, it doesn't matter. A good camera.
DSLR.
Thank you. And so, Chris, in your experience in doing anything, especially with the video, any better cameras that you've come across, and I'll open that to any guys, that are certainly I can go buy. I mean, today I went down to Best Buy and I picked up a mid-range, you know, Sony Handycam that's got HDMI out on it, and there's some gyrations you can do. I think this was $325 or something. Not bad. It's got like 50 times digital zoom and a 8x optical or something like that. Maybe that could be different, but. Chris, anything? Have you worked with any kind of video equipment?
Yeah, you know, I'm like you. I've got a Microsoft LifeCam Studio camera, and that's like one of the better cameras that you can get on the market. That is still a web camera, and it, just like you were saying, it's really built for this. You know, put it on top of your monitor and do that kind of thing. Now, I can't say I've used it, but I know a lot of the bigger video podcast guys are using. DSLRs now to shoot their video. So I can't say I've taken that leap, but that seems to be the trend, is to use the DSLR with the glass on it to record video in some fashion.
Can you plug that right into your computer and act like a webcam? That's one of the things, you know, I'd want to get that camera in the Hangout here.
Yeah, it's not going to be as plug and play as a USB webcam is going to be. There are a bunch of ways you can do that, and you know, I'm not really horribly familiar with all of them, but they probably involve some kind of some extra hardware or something like that.
Well, and sure. Greg Welch is saying, and I was looking into this as well. You need a Blackmagic capture card to bring those things in.
Sure.
And I did look at a Blackmagic card today. All of them convert to some kind of signal that goes into a TV. You know, goes. Like if I was going to attach that to a TriCaster or something like that, I didn't see any of them that turned it into USB, because that's really what Google Hangouts or what Skype is expecting, right? It's expecting to get that video on a USB port and bring it in that way, and that's kind of really what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and one thing, you know, to broadcast the end user, I use some software called XSplit. And in fact, I know we've talked about this before, but... not on Home Tech, obviously.
Yeah, it's been a while, too, here, so go ahead and say it. Yeah.
So the XSplit allows you to use it as a virtual web camera. So potentially, and I'm not quite sure how this would work out, you could pull, you know, an arbitrary amount of camera sources into XSplit and then have Google Hangouts use the source that is XSplit as opposed to, you know, directly or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, the trick to get, you got to get that streaming into your computers first, right? You got to make sure you have all those right connections to get it in there. And with this, the thing I'm learning with video is that with audio latency, you could get away with a lot, right? Because audio is so small, and so, you're like, okay. Video totally changes that. If you have any latency built into your system, it really starts hosing stuff pretty quickly and degrades your video quality. And messes with the sync between the voice and the, you know, the picture.
Yeah, audio is easy, it turns out. I mean, you record some audio and you can edit it. You can you can remove stuff. You can just like add new sentences if you want, and you can't do that kind of stuff with video.
I know. It's as we've gone more video podcasting, especially as I do it at Gallup now, and I get people all the time who are like, "Oh, could you?" Like, so we did, 2 weeks ago, we did Robert Scoble. We interviewed him.
Oh, neat.
And it was great. It was one of those things that's like, you know, it was just, it was a great experience. And if you want to, if you're listening to this and you want to see that, head out to coaching.gallup.com, and it's in the playlist that's there on the page. But so in the interview, I was introducing Robert, and I mentioned that I said, and he's a glass hole, right? You know, which is what we call the guys that have Google Glass, right? Well, later on, I think he felt free, and he said the word asshole in the show, right? And I really didn't want him to say that. I think I could get away with glass hole, but the other way around, maybe not. So a couple of the guys were like, "Hey, can you just take that out?" Well, that's more, you know, that's in the, on the audio, absolutely, piece of cake. Go in there, cut. In the video, I've got a, you know, you need some much more powerful video editing software, and to really make it look right, you just bleep it, right? You just kind of bleep that out. So it's a lot harder to edit the video, and when it goes awry, it's a lot harder to fix it.
Yeah, because if you make a cut, you'll end up teleporting somewhere, right? So
yeah,
you know, we kind of, as humans, we naturally move around a little bit, and when you're trying to edit video, you can't make those kind of cuts.
No. No, it just doesn't work as nice. Well, I'll have to continue to struggle with this because I definitely want to get, and I don't want it to go through, you know, some folks have said with the video, hey, why don't you just bring that into a TriCaster? And then you can, you know, and yeah. Man, that gets expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And it gets complicated. I'd really just like to upgrade the cameras and do whatever I need to take to get those to come in via USB. We're going to use Google Hangouts like this for some training, and so we might get, you know, 10 people in a hangout like this, and you have an instructor. And my goal is to have a room that's got several cameras in it that would have an instructor cam and maybe a whiteboard cam and a producer in it as well to help kind of with the tech pieces of it. And so I want, you know, I want different cameras. And I don't want them to be webcams. That's just not good enough. Although tomorrow I think I've got an extra C920 that I'm going to set up in that room and just see just how bad it would be at 5 feet as or 6 feet as opposed to 2 on that. Tony or Christian, any thoughts on video? You guys, you can say no if you want.
Until 3 weeks ago, I was using a webcam from 2007.
Oh.
So, right before the home server show, I went out and bought a C920, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a good camera. It's a good camera.
It is. I think it's the standard, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
it took getting one to realize just how good it is, or the life cam like you have too, right? The HD.
I used to have one of those. Well, yeah, back home, but I feel like, well, this is, the life cam that I had was a 720p, and the C920 is a 1080p, 15 megapixel, so.
Yeah, this one will do, weirdly enough, it'll do 1080p stills, but it won't do 1080p video.
Yeah, I think that's the bandwidth limitation of the USB 2, so that's why the USB 3 really has helped things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I immediately plugged mine into the USB 3, and it's just been dynamite. There's some questions going on in chat. Yes, so we talked about on the show for Christmas, and I said Santa brought me some new lights and a new camera. Santa was Dave McCabe, so that was he shipped me some stuff for Christmas as a Christmas present. And the lighting has drastically changed. Chris, are you running any lighting in front of you there in your studio?
Yeah, I've got a it's nothing professional. It's just a desk lamp over here. But what I did is I pointed it up at the wall. So if I turn it off, I can live in a cave over here, and
yeah,
you can see if you're watching on the video that it makes a big difference. You know, you just point the light over at the wall, and you get this diffuse glow, as opposed to, you know, looking like a caveman with the screen blanking out your face.
Right. And we've talked before that these webcams, because the sensors are so small, they're light starved. And so just the more light you can get to them, the better. Christian, you reset up your area over there. I will say the studio, the Maryland studio. You've got some lights right in front of you now. Got a couple lights burning bright.
Yeah, three.
Yeah, and that's really helped you. Tony, you got anything in front of you?
Just an overhead light.
Yeah, and that's the big difference, right, is to have those. We actually took Dave, so Cowboy Studios are who makes these lights, and they're actually very, very affordable. I think both of them together were about $75. and actually get a kit with three. I haven't even deployed the third light. I could put that down on the floor if I needed to somewhere. But I actually, because I'm down in the basement and the rafters are exposed where I'm at down here, I am the stereotypical podcaster in the basement, you know, podcaster. I turned the stands upside down, and then I used plastic pipe holders to mount those right to the overhead, so they're actually hanging from the ceiling. And what that did is it just cleared the floor from having any cabling, or I was always kicking those things when I was going back behind it to get at them. So it made for a nice little just suspended light. You know, they're two big umbrellas. They're you can't see, but they're pretty big. Two big umbrellas with 245 simulated watts. It's a round fluorescent that I think burns at 60 watts, but they let off the light like it's 240. And so it gets nice and bright down here, and I think it makes a big difference. You know,
yeah, definitely makes a big difference.
Yeah. So, you know, when we talk about price, Christian talked about he got his webcam. He got a C920 for about, now he had a $25 gift certificate, but you said you found it for $69 or $59?
$59. And refurb? New.
Oh.
And it was $90 on Newegg, and I ordered it, and then like 2 days later, I saw the price went up to $75 on Amazon. So
okay, so you must have caught an Amazon deal with that, because it's typically $75. It used to be $99. They've really come down in price, and so if you're looking to upgrade your webcam, that's not a bad way to go right now, is to get into that C920 or the Microsoft makes the Life Cam. You want to make sure, Chris, yours is 1080p.
So it's 1080p stills and it's 720p video.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that's
just because it's older, really, at this point.
Right. Right.
And it, by the way, is about $50 on Amazon. Retail is $100.
Yeah, and not a bad camera.
Does anyone know if anyone has the 930e?
You know, I was looking at that 930E earlier, and that's a business model that they sell. They charge a little bit more for and stick a business label on it.
Yeah, I didn't really know what the difference was, yeah.
You know, sometimes enterprise version. Oracle does this all the time. You know, it's the enterprise version. It's no different, you know. I can't say that for sure, but I'd imagine it's gray instead of black, and you know, they charge a little bit more for it. But so I think if you're talking with the family, I think an upgraded webcam, if you have an older webcam and you're looking for just a little bit better performance out of it, I think you can get a pretty easy upgrade in that. Chris, let's talk a little bit about microphones too. You're running the Cadillac there, right, of mics. You get the Heil?
No, this is the Audio-Technica ATR.
Oh, it is.
2100.
Okay. Yeah, I was. I just took a quick look at it. So you and I are using. What were you using before you used that? Because I know you haven't always been using that. Right?
I brought it out of the closet because I knew you'd ask. I was using the Samson CO1 with this spider mount, and it's a pretty good mic. You know, it's a condenser. It's cheap. It sounds pretty good. If you get too close to it, it'll start peaking. So you got to be a little careful. But I think it was on recommendation of someone on Twitter, I got the 2100, and this thing is a $35 or $40 microphone, and it sounds like a $200 microphone. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, you always have the best sound in audio.
Thanks. Yeah, this microphone works really well live, and then if you listen to the downloaded version, you know, I apply some special magic to make me sound a little more like a radio DJ or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it just kind of cleans up the audio, enhances it a little bit. I mean, you can't. Yeah. That's the thing. That's
can't
the other
get too
thing.
Crazy.
Well, Chris, that's the other thing with audio. You know, we're talking about the mixing difference between mixing audio and video a few minutes ago. You can't fix crappy audio, right? If it's crappy, if the digital signature is crappy,
yeah,
there's very little you can do to make it sound any better. So you really need to start with really good. You know, that the goal is get as good of a raw version as you can. Now you can enhance that, but you can't. It's really hard to bring really bad audio up to some kind of listening standard.
Yeah. If just speaking about music for a second, they say the best. If you record the music really, really well, you actually don't need to, you know, use auto-tune or apply any kind of effects or anything.
Right.
If you mic up a band really well and they give a really good performance, then you actually don't need to do a whole lot. But unfortunately, most people aren't such a talent, right?
Right. Well, it's tough, right? But that being said, I think there are some things you can do, and I guess the reason I wanted to head down this path, the guys in the chat are like, hey, why are we talking about podcasting? I intended, Chris, because I had you on the show, I wanted to talk about some video and some audio techniques, and the goal was not to get you guys podcasting. The goal was just to, I think, talk about some things. You know, we talked about the C920. I think that makes, if you're doing any kind of video with your family, that helps the experience, right? It just makes it better.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
Sound is another one of those things. Yeah, do you need to get a Rode, you know, a Rode podcasting arm? Do you need to, you know, do you need to do all those things? No, but
yes, I do.
Well, you do, and I do as well for what I do. But I'm talking about like the average guy.
Oh no, yeah,
do they need to? No, absolutely not. In fact, you can get this Audio-Technica 2100, or they have a version 2005, I think is what it is. The Audio-Technica 2005. It's black. It's got a little bit better of a switch. It's actually cheaper right now. We've kind of driven up, the podcasting community has single-handedly driven up the price of the ATR 2100, which used to be $35. Now it's almost $50 in a lot of places. I think that wouldn't be a bad mic just to have, again, if you're doing a lot of video conferencing, maybe if you're even working from home, if you're one of these guys that does a lot of call-in, I use my Google Voice number, or I'll connect via link, or I'll do a Skype call, or I'll do a Google Plus. I'll do all that. I would rather be home in the studio making those calls because I know the sound is so much better when I'm doing it that way. And so, you know, I think it's great. I think everybody should think about, especially the guys that listen to this podcast, about upgrading your audio quality as well. You don't have to run that through a mixer. I do. Chris, you do as well, right?
No, I actually don't have a mixer that I run it through.
Man, you're surprising me.
So, when I do the end user, at least, right now I'm just taking the audio straight off the mic into the Google Hangout, but when I record the end user, we do it over Skype, and I use virtual audio cables to route all the audio around, and then I record into one mono channel in Audacity. So, you know, I do that because I want to keep it all in software. It gives me some flexibility that I wouldn't otherwise have. You can do some really wacky stuff. I experimented with a three-person podcast on three mono channels with, it was something like 15 virtual audio cables and two instances of Skype and two Skype accounts, all running on one software box. All of the routing was happening, and it was working. And granted, you know, that's really overly complicated, and it was a complete nightmare to set up.
Yes, it was.
But it did end up working, and, you know, you gain some flexibility when you keep these things in software. And, you know, sometimes it's not the best. I wouldn't approach any layman with virtual audio cables, perhaps looking at talking with their family or anything. But it gives you a lot of flexibility in a way something like a TriCaster would, except for audio and not video, obviously.
Yeah, but, and a little less expensive at $25 as opposed to... virtual audio cables, look that up if you heard of those before. Chris actually introduced me to those last year during CES, helped me troubleshoot some things with them. We ended up not using them. But they're very, very flexible if you want to set up different... I mean, if you're doing a lot of different sound inputs or outputs, virtual audio cables are a great way to do it. And like Chris says, keep them all in the software. So, Chris, you're connected straight just from a mechanical. You've got the 2100. You're going through the USB right into the computer.
Oh, not quite.
Oh, okay.
So I've got a preamp here, and I'm using the XLR input on this mic. So since I'm an audio guy, I got to have some way to run Pro Tools. And it used to be, it's not true anymore, but it used to be that to run Pro Tools, you had to have this hardware, period. End of conversation. They had it DRM to this hardware. So, you know, I wish that the audio industry was a little more open with their software, and they have opened up a little bit over time. But to run Pro Tools at the time, I needed this thing. It's called an MBox 2. So, this device happens to have two preamps in it, and the preamp in the USB part of the ATR2100 is a horrible preamp. And I say that, and it's actually a fine preamp, right? But if you've got a dedicated preamp that you can use, it's going to sound a lot better. So anyway,
yeah,
I run the XLR out of the mic into the M-Box, and then the M-Box plugs into USB into the computer, and that's where the audio interface happens.
Okay. So a little more complicated, you know, I'm different. I go XLR into a mixer.
Right.
And then I can add different things into the mixer. I could add sound effects if I wanted to. You know, I could get music going. I choose not to. And I really like my mixer because it gives me great control over the sound. And like you, yeah, I like the mic coming through this mixer rather than the USB. Now, at work, when we do the Gallup podcast, that's all USB. I don't monkey around with no mixer, no soundboard. It goes straight into the computer. We go straight into a Google Hangout. Still pretty good sound, I think. Yeah, it's not A quality. It could use some help, and we're going to continue to upgrade as we move along. But it just works. Christian, I'm going to get to a question here that Joe Miner, John Stutzman, asked in chat here in a second. But you know, Christian's got a headset that gets the sound back into his ears, right? Christian, you're hearing us yourself too with that headset, or just us?
No, just you. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't hear yourself back. Tony, you're in the same situation, and that's weird for you, right?
Because yeah, it is.
You hear us, but you don't hear yourself. Christian, I didn't realize you weren't hearing yourself. Isn't that, it's kind of weird, right, to talk and then have those things kind of muffled over your ears?
No.
Oh, okay. He's used to it.
I like it.
Jim, I do a mix minus, too. I don't hear myself when I'm
really? Talking. So you don't hear your own voice in your headset when you're during the podcast?
No.
Oh, man, that would drive me nuts.
And actually, what I do is on my right ear, I pull back the headphones a little bit just to make it a little bit less strained.
Yeah.
But I experimented with that, and ultimately what I wanted is they call mix minus, which is a mix of everybody talking but except for yourself.
Right.
And ultimately I think that having my voice fed back to me was a little distracting.
Hmm. So you're just not as maybe stuck on your own voice as I am, is what you're saying.
You I feel like it's via lag, wouldn't it?
No,
maybe not.
But. No, it's in real time. The board makes sure, the way I've got it set up on the board here makes sure there's zero latency for me in hearing it back. I gotta hear my voice. I can't do it without it. If I feel like I'm shouting into the microphone and those kinds of things. Yeah, Tony's shaking his head. Yeah,
it's more tolerable this week, but it's still somewhat odd.
Yeah. It for me, I don't see everybody's a little bit different, and so you got to kind of come to it on your own. John Stutzman asked, so how do you get the echo to go away, right? If you're, say you're in a family room and you've got a camera, you know, you're using the camera and the mic on the camera and maybe speakers, and the placement of those speakers are everything, because there is some noise canceling built into these cameras, right? Especially the ones that have microphones in them as well. But they don't always do the best job. And so if you're getting an echo back, it just means that the noise canceling feature is not working. And the best way around that, honestly, is to do it the way we do it, right? I require everybody has earbuds in so that we don't get that echo. Tony, we were talking about that. You were worried about that when we started the podcast today because you were going to just go with the camera. That's okay depending on the room size and where the speakers are placed and those kinds of, you know, those kinds of environmental factors. Mm-hmm. But if you absolutely want to eliminate this is what's hard about doing a live podcast, is if you're doing a live podcast and you're pushing sound out to the audience, you've got to really make sure that those microphones aren't picking up that sound, because Chris, any tips on echoes? Because you are the sound guy.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to use headphones. That's kind of the end of it. If you're not using headphones, you're going to get an echo. There are some things that you can do via positioning where the microphones are and that kind of thing, but ultimately it's second fiddle to just wearing headphones. So if you're in a live, maybe like recording a podcast live in front of an audience at a conference or something, that's a little different. You know, it's a little harder to get people to wear headphones in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Although you could use a compressor, right, in that scenario, that it's gonna drop out that bottom end, and the sound of your voice coming back may get canceled out by the bottom end being gone.
Yeah, there are some things you can do the way that you place the speakers, you can place them in such a way that, so as, you're not gonna just do away with echo altogether, but you can at least minimize that.
Yeah.
With some, I'd have to go look at some, I'd have to go look at some textbook or something. But there's a way that you can place the speakers in that minimizes the cross chatter.
Yeah. Yeah. And John Stutzman out there in chat, John, the placement of that camera and the in relation to the speakers on the TV is important. So if you're in that living room trying to chat with family, and that's, you know, a lot of people throwing that webcam, they probably got a computer, either got an HTPC on their big screen, they're
Xbox
dialing
Xbox One.
Yeah, right on. And the only way those things really work well without echo is that noise canceling, and that is tricky.
Yeah.
It doesn't always work.
And they have to have two microphones for that. And I think MacBooks do that too. They've got two microphones on the lid of the laptop, and they're able to perform some kind of cancellation because they know how far they are apart.
Yeah, and so you just fiddle with it. Fiddle with the speaker placement. You know, turn the sound down a little bit if you can, because it's not practical in the living room for everyone to listen on headphones. It just, that's not going to work. You're going to have to kind of work on the environmental situation there. Yeah. Here, you know, the 4-year-old nephew, you know, here, put these headphones on so we don't get an echo. No, that's not going to work.
Can we at least use Bluetooth?
They could, but what if you got a family of three or four in there, right?
Give a 2-year-old a Bluetooth headset.
Yeah, that's not going to work. Tony?
I was going to say the average guy is going to use an iPad and FaceTime.
Yes, but even that, I talk to my sister that way, and I echo. So she gets, mm-hmm. if she puts the iPad in just the wrong position, or mm-hmm. it's right, and you know, the only reason I'm talking about this is because, well, one, the technology has gone mainstream, and so we're going to do a lot more talking audio video to our family, and so that's real average guy stuff. But the experience still matters, and mm-hmm. to me it does, right? And if you're getting a weird sound, or it's not good quality, or it's cutting in and out, that's a terrible conversation, you know? And so I'm always interested in getting the best possible quality. I mentioned this on a show a couple weeks ago. She sits in the absolute worst place in the house. Like, she's found where the reception is the worst, and that's her favorite spot to sit, right? And so her sound is terrible, and I'm always cutting out, and I'm getting weird echoes back. And I'm like, hey, Liz, can you move closer to your router or get a new one or something? Because I'm having a hard time on your iPad. She loves that, though, Tony. You are right. She wants to talk on nothing else but her iPad. The other night, her daughter's getting married, and I'm going to DJ the wedding reception. And so we were just kind of planning some stuff, and she took the iPad and set it there. She's like, hey, do you mind? We're eating. And I'm like, no, I don't want to continue. So she sets the iPad down in the middle of the table so I can see both of them, and we have a conversation. And you know what it was like? It was like it was at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It was really cool. It was like, we're having this conversation. I can see them. They're looking at me. It was like I was having dinner with them. Now, it was a good spot. Sound was good. Sound quality was good. But I'm trying to just think of some things from an average guy perspective of getting better audio and video. And I think one of those ways, better microphone. You know, I could set this on the desk if I wanted to. And it comes with a tripod and a stand for it, and that would work. Mm. And a pair of earbuds that you plug into the back of this thing. It's got a headphone out on the back, and you could plug it in and hear your own voice that way. That's what I like. Obviously, I'm the minority here because Chris Barnes says he doesn't want to hear his own voice. But, Chris, I still don't know how you do that. I would have thought you would have been a voice playback guy for sure.
No, I definitely don't. It seems strange to me hearing myself back. So.
All right.
I don't know. It's just a personal thing, I guess.
I know. It's preference, right? And there's no right or wrong. It's just preference. So, well, good enough. We're over a little bit on time, and so let me wrap this up. I did mention earlier that there's some new material out on the blog, so if you haven't been out there in a while, we did Mike Howard and I did a short review of the Fitbit Force, and so that's about 45 minutes of – it's about 15 minutes of a review of the Force and about 30 minutes just talking about fitness in general. So if you're interested in heading out there, just go to theaverageguy.tv, scroll down a little bit, look for the Fit – or put Fitbit in the search. It'll just bring it right up. Just as a follow-up to that, my Fitbit's actually died. So I must have ran it too hard because it's dead. I'm going to have to return it and get another one. And I am hearing they're having some problems with those. So I loved it. I'm going to get a new one. I'm not going to give up on it, but the unit I have is not holding a charge, so I'll have to take it back and get that done. I mentioned a little bit earlier Robert Scoble as well, and that's out at the coaching site, so coaching.gallup.com. Fun interview with Robert. My two worlds collided, my work world and my tech podcasting world collided. It was great to have him on there as well. I want to say thanks for supporting the Average Guy network by your Amazon purchases, so theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. And another great month coming up, and I've got some money available. If you want to do a tech scholarship fund and review something, we'll buy it for you. You review it, one post, come on the podcast, you get to keep it. So if you think of something you'd like to do, send me a note, jim@theaverageguy.tv. I'd love to get rid of some of that money that came in Christmas. You know, the December, January, and February have been great months from, I guess February can't be a great month yet, but November, December, and January have been a great month. And so if you want to do that, let me know, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Tony, good luck to you. I know you're in the midst of moving, and so you're closing like mid-February sometime?
February the 20th.
Okay. Well, we'll leave you alone now. We got you on Home Server Show. We got you on my show. We will now leave you alone to move. So thanks for taking the time to come on. Chris, it's always great to have you on Home Tech. It's great to talk to you anytime. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it's been too long. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we got to do it again. We'll try not to make it a year this next time, and I'll get you on a little bit sooner. Maybe we'll shoot for once a quarter or something like that, or whatever works in your schedule. So it's great to have you.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah, for sure. And Christian, great to see you. And we've got we have a new podcast coming with Christian. We're shooting for one or two times a month. It's going to be an offshoot of Christian's Corner, which is why I slowed him down tonight. You know that Christian can talk, and so it's going to be me. I'm going to say go, and Christian has got some great topics that he's going to kind of cover around security, cybersecurity, and some of the things he's been learning there at the University of Maryland. So if you wanted a education from the University of Maryland, you can come and get a condensed version when Christian and I, and we're not going to do the first one live. We are, but we're not going to advertise it. We're going to try a couple of these and see how they go. So Christian, thanks for coming out tonight.
Thanks. Good to be here.
We do this every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern. Chris, when do you guys do your podcast again?
So we do it Tuesday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. We're on the East Coast.
Did you move to Tuesdays?
Monday.
Yes, Mondays. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, Monday.
We used to do it Tuesdays. Oh, boy.
Or that was Monday.
Monday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Jim, can you just cut that out of the video?
Yeah. I'll just. It's like it never happened in there. So Monday nights, 8:30 Eastern, where at?
It's over at thedigitalmediazone.com, or we also have theenduser.com, which redirects. That's thendusr.com you can go to.
Very cool. And I try to make it out there as often as I can. Monday nights are actually a great night to podcast because the internet is quiet on Mondays. I don't know why, but it's a quiet place. It seems pretty calm. I think everybody's just trying to recover from the day. And
yeah,
so
we can get on there and be a little noisy for you then.
Yeah, I like it. No, it's a nice Monday night when I can make it. I appreciate what you guys do out there, so thanks a bunch. We do this every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, averageguy.tv/live. And we'd like to have you back. First time listening, send me a note, jim@theaverageguy.tv. Let me know how you liked it. We'll be back. Actually, we won't be back next Thursday. I will be in Southern California. I'll be traveling. Actually, you know what? Maybe I can be next Thursday. So scratch all that. I'll edit the video. You'll never know it happened. And we will be back next week, Thursday. Bill Pullman will actually be on. He's scheduled to be on. I thought I was going to be out of town, but on Thursday I'll be here. So Bill Pullman will be on. Thanks for listening. Stay around for the post show. Thanks, everybody.